Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this community and well-being meeting. And a special welcome to our new chair of the Health and Care at County. And please, you're welcome to come and sit at the table as well. You don't have to sit at the back. You know, it's. And if I pronounce this wrong, I do apologise. No, if you sit there, because we have the cabinet, you don't have to sit there. Antonio Lando Fattorini, have I got that right?
Yeah.
Oh, right, thank you.
Close enough.
Close enough, right. I do apologise if I've not spelled it correctly. Let's get through this meeting and agenda so we can get out, probably enjoying our sunshine before it goes dark. Right, okay. Can you all make sure that all your phones are on silent or switched off, please? Thank you. Right, the first item on the agenda is the minutes of the 27th of March on the council website. Has anybody got any comments to make about it or anything? No? Everybody quite happy with that? So I can sign them as a true record.
Councillor Nixon.
Sorry?
Happy to talk outside of the committee.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Thank you for that. Apologies.
Councillor Rose, substituted by Councillor Spencer.
Good evening and welcome. Okay, no other apologies. So we've got people missing. Yeah, okay. Public question times? No. Councillor session? No. Yeah. Right, can I then call on Marnie actually to give us a rundown on the task and finish workforce that we've started on the food waste, please? And if anybody wants to make any comments.
Thank you, Chair. We were joined by Julie Coatstake, who is the Recycling and Waste Service Manager, and Andrew Bird, the Service Director for Sustainable Environment at Newcastle Underlying Borough Council. And this was at our last meeting. They gave us a presentation on how they have run their food waste collections over the last 15 years now. Mm-hmm. We particularly were interested in listening to the ups and downs of the operations, the lessons that they've learned over the years, and the changes that they've made to combat some of those challenges that they seem to have faced. And as one of the foremost authorities in the country to start the food waste collections, they've learned an awful lot over the years. We wanted to find out about their communications. Obviously, we're going to be needing to put communications out to members of the public, so we were interested in listening to what they've been doing. So they joined the national communications, such as Green Week, circulated information via their websites, social media pages, getting the messages out, obviously, to the residents, as well as the usual leaflets, etc. They've also been getting the local schools involved really heavily, which we found quite interesting. Mm. They've been bringing mascots in, they've developed a mascot, food waste mascot, and they've been taking them into the schools, teaching the children about food waste, and giving them stickers and things to put onto the food waste bins to encourage the parents to then put the food waste out. Yeah. And it's an initiative that seems to be working really well in the area. They're just about to start rolling out to flats. It's not something that they've done before, but obviously with the compulsory introduction of the food waste collections next year, it's something that they've now had to tackle head on. They've found issues that they're having to look at how they're going to combat some of those. Obviously the whole collection service is completely different with a flat than it is with a household, so that's something that they're currently looking at the moment. I think the lengthiest discussion that we had as a group was about the use of caddy liners. So biodegradable liners are not used in caddies because they actually start to break down with the food waste. Particularly if there's a lot of liquid sitting in the bottom of the food waste caddies. And obviously then it goes to the collections, they try to empty it out, it goes everywhere, it's a nasty mess. But interestingly enough, the food waste will wash off plastic bin liners if the caddies are lined with plastic bin liners or plastic bags, but not off recycled plastic liners. So going down the eco-friendly route is the least eco-friendly way of tackling this issue, because then when it eventually goes to the plant, the food waste actually sticks to the eco-friendly plastic, yet it doesn't stick to the normal plastic bags and plastic bin liners. So they can filter that out, but they can't filter out the eco-friendly caddy liners, which obviously means that that then eventually ends up going into the ground along with the rest of the waste as it's being obviously made into mulch or compost or whichever avenue they go down. Which actually gave us a real head scratch, because it kind of goes against everything that really we have learned to live by. It's something that really went across against the grain for all of us. We all felt that it was it was counterproductive, really, to do that. We don't like the fact that we could be causing contamination with microplastics, but at the same time, we don't want to encourage people to reuse old carrier bags either, because then we're creating a demand for something that we're trying to encourage not to use. And the same with if we supply liners, we would have to supply non-biodegradable liners, which then creates a whole other issue. If we're trying to look at becoming more carbon neutral, we've got to look at the cost involved for the council to provide these, where they're coming from, how they're being manufactured, and the carbon footprint that goes along with all of that. It just doesn't seem, it didn't feel to us as a group that it was a correct route to take. The officers have been fantastic. They've looked at other authorities, they've looked at how they've run their food waste collections. At the inset, most of them have started off with caddies and liners, and then some authorities down the line have removed the liners from the collections, which has then caused an uproar with the residents. Because obviously they're having something that they're already used to using then being removed. So what the officers have agreed to do is to kind of cast the net a little bit further afield, look at authorities that they haven't spoken to yet that have started up the food waste collections with caddies, without liners, and looking at the way that their residents have reacted to that, whether it's been actually something that, because they've never had them, it's not really a problem, or whether they're finding there's a lot of kickback. So it has obviously and is causing the officers to do a little more work, but we did appreciate the fact that we were asking them to do this, and we just felt that it was important information that we needed to bring back to the focus group to be able to really give a good overview as to what we thought was the best route to take with the residents. We have also, or are also, looking at speaking to various eco groups and residents associations and residents groups to try and get some feedback from them as well, just to find out what the feel of it all is in Stafford. So we had some slides, actually. By Newcastle did send the slides that they used for the presentation, which I'm sure, if we haven't already sent them to everybody, anybody that wants them, we will be making another, organising another meeting as soon as we've got the information that we need from the officers regarding.
Oh, that's really good. Well, thank you very much for that comprehensive report, Marnie. That's really interesting.
I think the one thing that did come up was.
I'm going to come back to you, Anna, because I know that.
We also all felt that really what we needed to do is to educate people about the way that they are buying and using the food to try and reduce the amount of food waste that's being produced, as opposed to just encouraging them to use the food waste collection. And I think that's perhaps something that, well, I hope that the government will look at putting some information out regarding that at a later date, as opposed to just about.
When's your next meeting?
We're going to wait and find out what the information is that comes back from the officers.
Well, thank you very much for that. I mean, that's really interesting, isn't it? I think it's... thank you. Anne, you wanted to come in, because I know you sit on that as well.
I just wanted to add that the savings, if we didn't use bags, was £25,000 a year. So quite a lot in savings. But also the description of how they broke down the plastic was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, and they started it a long time ago when people weren't talking about
plastic.
But they had these machines that were like big screws that mulched the plastic up. And then they said they filtered it. And I thought, well, you wouldn't filter all the microplastics out. You wouldn't be able to. So you're actually adding microplastics to the food chain. So we were really like, and they kind of took it in their stride because they'd always done it, and we were just kind of horrified, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing was that I asked my brother, he's in Kent, whether they do it, and they've done it for a long time. And I said, do you use plastic liners? And he went, no, why would we do that? So it's about your mindset, I think.
Something we learn from everybody else, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Josh, sorry. Go on, Brendan.
Lives in Kent.
Oh, right.
And they have liners.
Oh, right. Oh, well, this is...
Oh, well. Let's hope that when we start it, we get it right.
This is
Josh, do you want to come to the table and give a rundown on what you've just heard?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. And Councillor Cleaves has done a really good job of explaining the process. The difficulty with plastic liners, or not having plastic liners, is the yuck factor, as they call it, and people don't like it. And we were on a conference last week, a LARIC conference, LARIC CIWM. CIWM is the Chartered Institute of Waste Management, which a lot of us are members of. And LARIC is the Local Authority Consulting Committee, so that it's our two national bodies. And we're on a conference with them in Telford, an annual conference that they do every year for the Midlands region. And we're talking about this, and we asked the question, because Becky has posted the question on the LARIC national side, and do we or don't we? And the majority of councils that were there have come back to so far are doing it. They do provide plastic liners, because the downside of it is if we don't provide a liner, it's the yuck factor. And they say that you will get probably 80% of people won't partake in a or we use our own carrying bags and things like that. So that's the issue. Going back to the compostable bags that Councillor Fruit was describing really well, there's a difference between, so a compostable bag doesn't compost in an anaerobic digester because of the process is completely different. Compostable bags need air to compost, to return to nature. This is in an enclosed process. What we put it through is an anaerobic digestion process, so it won't work. The industry are quite happy with plastic bags and splitting them, because when you talk about mash, it just literally splits the bag open and then it spills it out on the centrifugal force. And I've seen the plants operating, and probably a good idea, if we can, would be to get members of the scrutiny committee to one of the local plants to look at it. County are just procuring plants at the moment. They've got three bids for our area, for the Staffordshire area, including a couple of local ones that you can go and look at, and they are quite fascinating plants, so you get to see what happens to the food waste. They're very smelly because of the ammonia that's given off and the methane, but that's then captured and used to create gas or methane, and then that's then used for electricity, and then the digestate is what goes on the food. Yeah, from an industry point of view, it's looking like the majority of local authorities are using bags at the moment. The only ones that tend not to be are the more affluent ones, and they expect the residents to buy their own. And that's what tends to happen.
Right.
So it's a dilemma. I'll get the microplastics, or, you know, And as an environmentalist and as an environmental officer for a long time in my career, you know, I don't want to be introducing something into the environment that isn't good for the environment. But I think you've got, sometimes you have to weigh up the pros and cons. And I think, you know, as it stands at the minute, the current research is that bags are good, and we have had some money from government for caddy and refractory.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, do you want to come back?
I think for us, it just seems crazy that we're creating a supply and demand for something that we're trying to discourage people from using in the first place. And although we can perhaps look at saying to them, if you want to, you can use an old carrier bag as a liner. But it's not really something we want to try and introduce or encourage, because even supermarkets are trying to
move away. But the downside is, if we don't provide anything, we are not going to get the yields.
No.
So when in a few minutes' time, when you start looking at recycling stats and you come back to the table about why we're not producing so well, this will impact on us massively on yield. And one of the things that government wanted to introduce this for was so people realise actually how much food they are wasting, and then reduce their food intake, and shop smarter, cook smarter, and that whole, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Philip, you want to ask a question?
Yeah, we looked at the caddies, and we were happy with the caddies, you know, the one that the people have in the kitchen, and then the one that they empty the waste into. But we were absolutely horrified at the fact that they were using these plastic bags. We suggested using newspaper or something like that, you know, to wrap it in.
Interesting.
It's the same as a compostable bag. It won't break. The providers would have an issue if we started asking people to use it, put in. In newspaper, we used to when we used to do at Canic, we used to have our food waste collected with our garden waste, and it used to be in vessel composted. And back in the day, when we first started, prior to me going into waste engineering, we allowed people to put cardboard in there. And what we found is that the layers of cardboard were impacting on the composting process, because they were forming like a thermal blanket in there, so it wasn't allowing the material to cook properly, because it has to cook at 70 degrees for at least 3 days in the vessel composting process, and it wasn't able to do it. And you'd probably have a similar issue if you started putting newspaper, especially given the quality of today's newspaper.
Yeah.
It's not like when we were young, when it used to get black over and it was really thin. It's quite thin.
You used to go to thin squares, you mean?
Yeah.
We were told a lot of people that have newspapers in there.
Yeah. We were told that they can't use newspapers. So.
Yeah. Thinking about what Marnie's come back about the public, and how are you going to educate the public as to what have you thought about that?
This is all part of what we're talking
about.
Part of the discussion.
And when is it plastics start? We have to start recycling plastics. Is it another 2 years away or?
Flexible plastics, films and sea grade plastics and flagpole plastics is 2027. We've got a pilot scheme in the borough where Veolia are taking it now to see how much they get through. So that will be done for the borough, but we're quite lucky with our materials recycling facility at Four Ashes that we can do that with them, and they're running that as a trial with us and Newcastle again at the moment to see how much they're actually pulling out, because previously it was a non-target material.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, Viola, I mean, that unit there just blew my mind away when I went to see it. You know, I just don't know how they filter everything. It's absolutely fantastic.
But
anyway,
to get scrutiny and cabinet as well, and other members as well, if they want to go and see. When county have procured the disposal points, to get you there to see them and see it in action, see it for real. As it stands, Craig gave an update, he'll send his apologies, couldn't be here tonight, but we've procured the caddies at the moment, they're all done.
Really?
That's all been done, so we are going to sign the order with the company, and that's ourselves, Canic Chase, East Staffs, Lichfield, Tamworth, South Staffs and Stoke and Trent, all done joint procurement for that, with the money we had from the government, we've worked on that. There's a conversation around that we're coming to you about, we have a light grey or a dark grey caddy, because so the options we've got, because we didn't want the case to be the same for a book at the moment, so
that's all done.
And moving on, obviously, with the working group, with the comms around it as well, and also Andrew, are leading on comms with the partnership, the Staffordshire Partnership, and County have just gone out again, well, they've just got their tenders back in, and I think I can tell you that there's at least 3 tenders for this area.
So, very good.
Touch wood, everything is going well. Some councils haven't even started that process. Quite scary last week, hearing some of them saying they haven't actually started doing anything.
Well,
yet. There is an April deadline from government, April 26th, that's going to be reported. So I'm really pleased with how the team have worked, especially given that we've got one full-time waste officer.
Well, thank you all for the work that you're doing on it. It sounds absolutely great. So you're going to work together, and then you'll come back with the next meeting and let us know how you get on. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, and thank you for your time for doing that as well. Okay, so we'll move on to the next item, with the which is the Health and Care Overview Scrutiny Committee on the 3rd of March. I suppose you've all read the papers on that, and is everything okay? Any more queries or anything? We've had one meeting since then on health and care, which Councillor, please forgive me if I pronounce it wrong. Can I just say?
3rd of March 2025.
Sorry?
This took place on 3rd of March 2025.
I'm sorry?
This meeting took place on the 3rd of March 2025.
Yes. So
was Jeremy Purdy cabinet member at that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Before the election. We've had one meeting since, which I'm just going to tell the committee about, and that was, I can't remember when it was, a couple of weeks ago, which Councillor... Can I call you Councillor Fattorini? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Alanda Fantine. Sorry, I do apologise. I'll get it right in a minute. Which she chaired, and it was, I don't know any comments on that, but it was just about training, really, for the new councillors. Do you want to make any comments on it? No? It's quite all right. You know, I put you on the spot, really, but I just thought, with it being in... You know, we had another meeting since the 5th of March. No? It's okay, don't worry. It was just a training exercise, really, but I just wanted the committee to know that we had another meeting. Okay, so now we'll move on to item number 6. Sorry?
Comment?
Yeah?
I just want to express that I just feel really happy that the items under 51 and 52 are there.
Absolutely. We'll come on to that when we get to the work programme at the end, if you, Councillor Nixon, if that's okay.
So, yeah, I'm happy to talk about that.
Yeah, okay. Lovely. Thank you very much. Okay, so we moved on to called in items?
No, Chair.
No. Okay, so now we'll move on to item number 7, which is page 8. Which is the end of year performance report. And I'm going to take this. Are you taking this?
Yeah. Questions.
Pardon?
Do you want to go ahead and we can answer any questions?
Yeah, if you want to come to the table, that's fine. Thank you. Yeah. Some of the queries on page 9, you'll find that there are some of the answers to that are in the appendix. So shall we move on to... Yes. Where are we? Page 12. Then, unless anybody's got any queries on the previous, that, as I say, on that page 9, it's giving a lot of, you know, information, but a lot of the answers are on the appendix. So, appendix starting on 1B at page 12. Yeah?
I'm just wondering when we're likely to have a new empty hands officer, please.
Your Chair, it's not in my area, that will be the responsibility of Gabrielle Whitehouse. Unfortunately, she had to send her apologies this evening, but we can raise the question with her and report back.
Oh, thank you, Anna. Thank you for that. Okay. Anybody else got any queries on page 12? No? Page 13? Is that a summary of the... Yeah. Page 14? Yep.
Mass of paperwork sent to me from the community
From where? Sorry, shout
from
up.
From members of our community, and it's overall to do with the building that's going on, it's to do with flooding, it's to do with empty houses. And if I was to talk about it, it'd fill up the entire meeting. So how am I best disseminating the information that I'm being given? It's quite complicated and complex.
Would it be better that you had a conversation with Anna, probably outside the meeting, if it's quite comprehensive and it's quite...
And can a member of the community to come with me to help explain that?
I'm sorry?
And is a member of the public allowed to come to that meeting to help explain it? Because it is quite complicated.
I would let Anna and yourself decide between that, but I would think that probably if you can put your points forward to Anna, she might be able to answer them.
Okay, do it that way and then...
Is that all right, Anna, with yourself?
I think I'd be happy to have a meeting. I think I'd need to understand more what the issue is.
Yeah, I think if you emailed Anna with your concerns.
I'm not sure if you would be, to be honest. It's more to do with planning,
which is clearly not a matter for this committee. So possibly if we take it outside of the committee and we'll speak to a colleague to be able to take that forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that. Thank you. So that's page 14.
Just to do with the homelessness and rough sleeping strategy, and I know it's not strictly this, but I just wondered what was happening as far as the hot weather's concerned and our rough sleepers at the moment, and what sort of number are we looking at?
Okay, through your chair, we do keep a weekly count of the number of rough sleepers, and we have a support officer out there every day, making sure everybody's okay, trying to make sure we know where they are and if there's any issues. We actually have MHCLG coming up here on Friday to do the 6:30 walk around as well. The Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government to look at the work we are doing with the rough sleepers on, by that stage, probably what's going to be the warmest day of the year. We're working with other charities as well around provision of water and ensuring we have somewhere to put stored belongings. So we're absolutely aware of the issues. We take it as seriously as cold weather provision that we see. I think the challenge we've got with rough sleepers in the warm weather is it's very, very difficult to encourage them to come in. In the winter, it is much easier for them to come in, but they do tend to refuse any offers during the summer period where it is warmer. So we do have that issue, but we do continually try to get people in all year round, but obviously aware in particular of the conditions that we're in at the moment.
Through you, Chair.
Yep.
Are we finding that then are we having a slight increase in homeless numbers than during this time of year compared to winter, because it's easier to leave the home or situation?
I have to say it fluctuates. So I can't tell you exactly, I haven't got the figures for this week.
It's okay, I know I'll put you on the spot, it's not strictly part of this.
No, it's related to it anyway though. It does vary. We can't say that there's definitely more in certain months than others, but I do think, you know, we are aware of, and talking through the cases this morning, about two or three people who are very clear they aren't going to be wanting to come in, and they will be staying out until at least the winter.
Okay, and is it, sorry Chair, is it possible to circulate information to the council as on advice to give members of the public if they come forward and raise any concerns that they have with anybody, what they should do, where they should go, who they should be signposted to, etc., just to obviously alleviate any concerns.
Absolutely, through your chair. I think, as we said, we do hopefully touch wood and know all the rough sleepers, but if there are rough sleepers that are new to the area, that members of the public are concerned about, anything like that, please report them through to the team. We work very closely with the PCSOs and the police as well, and we do welfare checks around to make sure that they're all okay. So if we're aware of them, we will go and do the checks and everything like that. So absolutely, call it to the team.
Thank you.
Thank you, okay. Yes, Anne.
Is there an approximate figure of homeless people?
I don't want to guess.
Okay.
And it's very, very difficult.
In single figures, though?
Yes, it's very, very different to homeless people as to rough sleepers,
yeah.
So we
yeah.
do need to make that distinction
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, of course.
On page 14, I'm reading this about the developing housing on council-owned land. Are you the one being to answer that, Anna? You know, what's that all about?
Yes, so this is the administration's priority around developing council-owned housing. It's something we're scoping at the moment with a view to understand whether that's going to be feasible going forwards.
All right, thank you. Has anybody else got any questions on page 14? No? Page 15? No? Everybody happy?
Well, yeah,
yes, Brendan.
Just on the top, review of the leisure, culture and heritage contract with Freedom of Freedom Leisure.
Hmm.
The Zoom meeting in May just gone. Has that suite of individual plans been created? Yeah.
Yes, they have. So we have a number of individual plans that are setting detailed targets for each element of the food and leisure service. Next year, we'll get the annual report that will be absolutely related to what they've delivered, what they've said they'd deliver, and what they've achieved. So I think going forward, obviously, for this financial year, we'll get an annual report, probably quite similar to what we've had in previous years. But next financial year, we should have something that is much more measurable, and we can really see how they are performing against what they're aiming to do.
Okay, thank you.
Right, page 15, yeah, we've just done here. And of course, we'll have Leisure coming and Reading Leisure coming and giving their report throughout. Yeah. Right, we're on page 16 now. So any, yes, Councillor Nixon?
I've come across children who have told me without me asking that they haven't had meals at night. Do it makes me feel that the reluctance of some families to get support with food. And I know, as we all do, that when it was World War II, there was a big push to get people growing food. And in light of what's coming ahead, is it worth trying to encourage people to have allotments and grow their own?
I don't know whether anybody can answer that.
I have an allotment.
You've got an allotment.
We have allotments in stone. There's a waiting list for them.
It's quite expensive to do, isn't it? Because you need wheelbarrows and spades and all the stuff. So it's not as easy as it sounds, and it's not as cheap as it sounds. But I'm just wondering if there's a way to coordinate and encourage it.
Through the chair.
Yes.
On the allotments committee, as the council rep.
You are, right.
I was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've been that in the past. Yeah.
And I think most of the allotments, they have some sort of little management personnel, don't they? And between them, they can sort out those issues about wheelbarrows and tools and equipment.
There are allotments that have a lot of free available spaces.
Yes.
And there are a lot of gardens who could be growing if you aren't.
Well,
I think the ones that in the borough on borough council land, I think they're relatively inexpensive.
Hmm.
I know the one in Hickson that we have is very expensive, in all honesty.
Hmm.
But
yeah, it's everybody's choice, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
If they want to do that and that, yes.
Hmm.
The problem you get with allotments is when people first go on. It's a big job.
Yeah.
You've got to really clear the patch.
Yeah.
And it's a massive job. You don't grow nothing in your first year, or it could be your second year. And it's getting people to stay the distance. So that these patches, plots, they're not getting a regular tenant.
Mm-hmm.
Found it to be quite tricky as well, in that some people would have two or three patches and would be quite, I don't know what the correct term would be, but yes, of the entire area, and would be quite rude to other people. Yeah, it's quite tricky. Yeah,
I think we're quite fortunate actually in the borough, the number of allotments we've got. There's quite a lot around, isn't there? And I think so it's right, okay. Yes,
I wonder if it's maybe worth raising with the environmental portfolio holder. Perhaps he can look at pushing it on social media and maybe advertise any allotments that are free that are borough owned.
If there is any, yeah. Probably on the borough website.
If people don't know that yeah. we're there, maybe.
Probably late in the season this year.
I imagine
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As my colleague here has just said, you know, once you get on, some of these allotments have not been used for years. And so would there be a way that perhaps we could look at perhaps you know, digging the allotments, you know, putting a cultivator on the allotments, paying for a cultivator to be used or hired to clear the allotments so that they can start to use it straight away?
I think that's something we'd have to put to the administration, and Josh might be able to answer that.
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah?
Our allotments are actually managed by an allotment committee
yeah.
that's external, the authority pays for them to do that for us. We do work with them on things like tree management and boundary issues and legal advice and things like that. Now, we can find out if there is any spare allotments. I'll be honest, I think food poverty is much, much, much wider than allotment space, to be honest with you. And I do think there are, again, as we just discussed there is an issue with turnover allotments. The actual turnover of the ground. And you know, you've got a couple of years before you start to get any yield out of an allotment. I'm not sure that it's going to be a solution. But that said, I do think it would be good to try and encourage younger people onto allotments.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost a long-term investment, but what we'll do, myself and Lee, we'll contact the Allotments Association and see if they have got any spare space and see what we can do.
Be a good idea to do that, and if they have, we could get
yeah. And it'd be nice to get some young
Will to put it on there.
And some,
yeah.
Perhaps get some engagement with the schools and things. Maybe.
Yeah, and get Will to put it on the website.
The schools at the moment.
Right. Okay.
That could be a strong
thing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, we can stay there, I think, because you might have some more queries on here, Josh, on the next section, page 17. Councillor Scott.
A couple of points on this. The tree management, I just wondered where things were on that, and you mentioned tree to be protection of the TPOs. Is it of a mind to create additional TPOs, or is it just looking at ones that are in place to see if they are functional and function correctly? What's the status?
We have a statutory obligation to protect trees in the borough, as do all local authorities. Within the borough, there are a number of historic TPOs.
Tell me about it. I've got one at the bottom of my garden.
we are overdue a review of those TPOs. So it's two strands. It's reviewing all of the TPOs we've got in place at the minute,
mm-hmm.
and also looking at how we put our TPOs in going forward.
So, sorry, Chair. Mm-hmm.
So
you're looking to expand the portfolio, if you will, of TPOs within the borough. Then is that the
we've got to,
yeah.
Because well, we set tree management as a priority last year. Because it was one of the things that I became aware of that I wanted both councils to do better,
mm.
and the expansive risk of having 78,000 trees between both authorities.
Mm.
So we said, right, we're going to set that and we start looking at it. The other thing as well, unfortunately, the borough has suffered for a number of years because it struggled to get tree officers.
Yes.
And we've ended up having to have consultant tree officers in
mm.
and part time consultants, and both of the established part-time consultants, one that worked in planning, the other that worked in street scene under Lee, have now retired and moved on. So we've now got other consultants in as part of the shared services. What we decided to do was disaggregate the planning TPO work and put it into what is now in natural environment. So under the equivalent of parks and open space at Canic, because at Canic we'd always done it, we took it out of planning a long time ago and operated it within our landscaping team at Shard Landscape Team, which is what we do in the borough. So what we've been looking at the work, and with the new tree management requirements, the requirement for us to publish our data on a portal, a web portal that developers can get hold of and find information around TPOs if they exist, if members of residents and others We've got an inspection requirement that we need to do at both the councils again, so we need to inspect all of our 78,000 trees, and then input that data and then come work the work programme for the health and safety work. So there's a whole host of work that's there. So to coin a phrase, yes, we are looking to expand tree management across both authorities because we've got to. And also we need to address these historic TPOs and look at those and revalidate them, for want of a better word. So we've got to go back and reapply for them, because some of them, at the minute, if they were challenged, I wouldn't say this is Kerry was here, but if they were challenged, we would struggle with because of the time that's expanded since they were first. So we are looking to expand the trees going forward.
Just want to come back on that. You mentioned the portal. When do you think that's going to be out?
Thank you for the question.
When is it going to start?
My portfolio holder that's sitting behind me was demonstrating on the portal yesterday. We've looked at it at the leadership team. We are doing a report to cabinet, which I'm finalising hopefully this week and next week with finance, asking for the money to be taken out of reserves at both councils for the system. The system that we're looking at is going to be the same system that county are operating, and I think through the Staffordshire authorities we want that system because it's the market leading system. We are hoping that at one of the scrutiny committees, either the next one or the one after, I'd like to get, or certainly get a group together at the scrutiny committees. We're going to demonstrate it, certainly to cabinet and to scrutiny, so you can see the system in action, because it is pretty impressive, to be honest with you. It will take a bit of getting there, but this is the way the government wants all local authorities to go, so everything is online and you can literally hover over a tree. You can identify the tree, identify if it's the boroughs, for example. It may not be the boroughs, it may be the counties, or could be somebody else's. And then you can see if there's a DPO or not that tree preservation.
Thank you for that question, because that's one thing I was going to ask, actually. And before I open the floor up, I've got to say to you, I spent 2 hours today with the tree officer from the county, looking at areas where we could plant trees, to be honest with you, which was quite interesting about, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can do this, you can do that. And it was a very informative meeting. My question really is, and I'm going to have a bit of a moan really, sorry, but the roundabouts that we've got in the borough, you know, you drive into Stafford and some of the roundabouts look so bland and they're just covered in grass and there's nothing, you know. Is there anything? Probably the cabinet member might be able to answer as well. Is there anything we can do to make our borough and the Stafford town look a little bit more impressive than it does now? I mean, you drive down past the showground and you see that beautiful monument, the Stafford Knot, on that roundabout. Then it's covered in old grass and that. Now, I don't know whether that roundabout belongs to the borough or whether it belongs to the industrial estate. But I drive round and I think, do you know, we could make our town look so much prettier, and that we could develop the roundabouts and let them make, you know, welcome to Stafford and this sort of thing.
The issue we have, Chair, is that the roundabouts are like the highways infrastructure. And we mow them.
Well, can't you work together and do something about it?
Well, we'd love to. But the County Council have got a limited budget, the same as we have a limited budget. And it's exactly the same as when you walk if you've got the high street and you look at the drains, and we did this last month, you've got ACO rain drains in the middle, and then you have a lot of tarmac in there, because the county they struggle with finances, and they're only doing things on health and safety. They don't tend to do things on aesthetic wise. And we can only do what they ask us to do on these islands. Some islands, we're very lucky, and they'll probably go in a minute, where we have sponsorship.
Well, I was just going to say, what happens to that money?
Yeah. That goes towards making that island nice.
But they don't look nice, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's only a limited amount of money we get, and we're doing better off the sponsorship this year than we have previously. We can only deal with the money that we have. Now, if members want to spend, you know, another £200,000 on street scene operatives, they can. It's what members want, but we've got to remember we've got other priorities as well.
Right, okay, let me come back to you there. We said about cost and that, you know, I've just been with Forest of Mercia and they're planting trees and they don't cost anything.
Yep.
But anyway, that's another story, and we'll take it out of this meeting.
Don't stand still on that one, Chair, because trees are great, but they have to be in the right place.
I know.
Yeah, and the soil of the highway isn't always the right place for trees.
I know, and you have to be careful what sort of tree
and
you put there.
What's under it as well.
Yeah. And the other thing is with trees as well, and I have the biggest problem as a councillor, and I probably people around the table might have the same thing. You can never find out there's a tree growing a piece of land. Does it belong to the county? Does it belong to the borough? Or does it, I've got this problem, and it really is annoying.
Often it would be that the best way to do it, or the way we, is whose land is it growing on? Because whoever's land it's growing on, unless there's a covenant on it, whereas we've, say, if we've planted or a local residence group have planted it, the county said, well, you can plant that, but you are responsible for it in perpetuity. That is the only way. But normally speaking, if it's on our land, it's ours. If it's on the county's land, it's theirs.
I understand all that.
Yeah, other than the difficulty you will have is if it's on unregistered land.
Unregistered land is a problem. That is the big problem.
Yeah.
And anyway,
there are lots of little packets of unregistered land.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Right. I'll go around the table now.
A couple of questions. So how many new TPOs have we put on in the last few years, or have we not TPO'd anything for some time?
We have put new TPOs on.
Are these on housing estates or plots of land that are going to be built on?
No, they're on trees that we feel have got. So in order to put a TPO on a tree, you can't just put a TPO on any tree. It has to have a value. It has to have a value, and there is a spreadsheet that the tree officer goes out and fills out, and he ticks the boxes and it scores the tree. It's aesthetic value, it's carbon value, everything, so it gets a score. If it passes a certain threshold, if it's, for example, if it's a sycamore, because sycamores are in the tree world are basically weeds, they don't like sycamores, it doesn't score very highly. If it's an oak, it's going to score highly. So if there is a tree that's in danger of development or something like that, there's a possibility to have a TPO. Now, we have, because we've only had two part-time officers in that time, we probably haven't done as many as we'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly haven't looked at the historic TPOs. So this is why we need some more TPO officers and more tree officers to start that work.
I noticed, sorry Chair, just come back, that we seem to be cutting down a lot more TPO'd trees than we seem to be establishing them. But if there are trees of interest, can members of the public come forward to you and ask about having them on? Does it have to be on public land, or can it be on private land?
Yeah,
any land.
Yeah.
And how can we find out right now how does a member of the public find out if a tree has a TPO on it?
This is the difficulty we can't at the moment.
The
only way you can come is if there's a query comes through to the tree officer, and at the minute we're using a Carrick Chase tree officer.
I have a query,
Gareth,
I need to bring forward, but I don't know who to contact.
Well, send it to Gareth Hare at CCDC.
Gareth Hare.
You'll find him in the email address. Send it through to Gareth. Copy me in, and I'll make sure Gareth looks it through. Gareth has been very good at the moment. He's come over, don't tell Canada's, but he's doing quite a bit of work on managing the trees at the moment for the borough with the two consultants while we're getting them in, and he's getting a grip with a lot of the TPOs. I think he's put quite a few on recently.
Yeah.
I think Councillor Fordham has had experience of going to the Council.
Councillor Fordham, do you want to come into the meeting?
Yeah. For you, Chair, thanks. I can add a bit of colour to that because there was a situation within my ward where owners of homes containing very mature trees in the gardens were beginning to cut them down. There had been TPOs on those trees. They were the old area TPOs. They went back to 1954. And there was some doubt as to whether in a legal case that protection would actually hold up. But members of the public complained. I got on to Gareth and he came out and looked at the situation, and within 72 hours he'd done an appraisal and actually put in a provisional TPO over those trees that has gone through consultation, has become a fixed up-to-date TPO. So as Joss has said, there are ways of dealing with the situation in the meantime, irrespective of the fact we are actually behind the game on this, as appreciate. So I would encourage that approach, as Joss said. It worked extremely well. It wasn't only on that one instance. I've had two other instances where that's worked.
Well, thank you for that information. Thank you. Yeah. Right. Councillor Nixon?
Thank you. I've got 3 points on tree management and 1 point on play area, please.
Let's carry on with the trees first, and then we'll go to the play area.
All right, then. So, and overall, I'm trying to choose my words carefully and make it positive. So, on tree management, on Douglas Road West, there were 9 trees, 8 of which were chopped down, and 1 I managed to half save. And I did raise the question of this: the people didn't have permission to do this, and it was on county council land. And I have asked about what's going to be done about this. I've got the reg plate and all the details of the company that did that. It was Aspire Housing that did it, and they didn't have permission to do it, so I need to chase that up. There's a child has come forward who has grown a tree and is wanting to plant it, so I wondered if it might be possible to plant it there too, because those 8 trees have gone.
Can I just stop you there? And sorry, Josh. Yeah, go on. Carry on.
I might be going to say what you were going to say.
I was just going to say you need permission actually from the county council to be able to do that. So can we have a conversation and I can probably help you to put you in the right direction who to speak to? Okay.
It was county council land that these 8 trees have gone, and I've got the vehicle registration, and it was a fire housing, and they didn't have the paperwork to do it.
Chair, for clarity for everyone. Unless there is a TPO in place on a tree, we have got no jurisdiction as a borough council on other people's land, only on our own, unless there is a TPO in place.
Okay, well,
if these 8 trees weren't TPO, which I don't believe they were, there is nothing that we could do about it.
Okay, on Charney Road, at the end of the Charney Road, there's a tree that has a TPO on it, and the resident who is living next to the tree is concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is if it's county council, as I say, we'll have a conversation and I'll put you in the right direction who to speak to. Okay, all right. Right, Scott, yes.
So, a more generalised question. When you mentioned the tree officer goes out, uses an Excel spreadsheet to determine, you know, if the tree's worth that Excel spreadsheet. Does that include speaking to the community or to the parish council to see how they feel that tree fits into their landscape?
It's literally, it is that professional officer's opinion on that particular tree, and it's scored on what is a national scoring system.
Yeah.
Going back before, a long time ago, I used to wind up my colleagues, Tom Walsh, about, you know, it was almost if like, he could put a TPO on any tree. As soon as he knew that something was happening, there's a TPO on it. There's more science to it than that. They have to score it on a national system.
I don't understand the app. I do see that in the TPO legislation. So it's more a tree of amenity.
There is amenity value. Yes,
so absolutely. Yeah. To gain that amenity value, sure, you need to speak to the communities
tends to be already been raised by the community.
Right.
So if you're asking for a tree to be TPO, we know. And in fairness, our officers are very tree friendly.
Yes. Yeah. There's no weight based on the amount of people that say, look, this is.
No. It only has to be one person or say a parish council. There's a value with this tree to our community. That's it. That's all we can do.
Thank you. And did you want to come in?
Yeah, I just wondered if we could have a presentation of the report.
I'm hoping to get what I'd like to do.
Yes, please.
Again, councillors board and saw it yesterday. We're going to present to both cabinet and scrutiny over the next couple of months with what we're looking to do, and we'll give you an overview of where we are with trees and TPOs and things like that.
£465,000 I think we've got in the county. £465,000
What I would suggest though, is it might be worth trying to do an early meeting if we can, maybe half an hour before.
Yeah.
And do it before screening.
Start at 6 o'clock instead of half past.
So, because I know how interested you're going to be, and it's a really interesting presentation.
And it's
also, it'll give you a flavour actually that we're not just sitting back and doing nothing. There is stuff going on behind the scenes on trees, and we're getting there with it.
We get a lot of inquiries as well.
Trees are so, it's,
Can I finish my tree one? Is that okay? Just one more thing about trees.
Louise, just a minute. Let me just finish going and I'll come back to you. Okay. Councillor Thorne,
my concerns are around the preservation of the older trees.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with them, but the ones that grow into the footpath. And
you mean the tree roots?
Yeah, to dig the footpath up. And then you get masses of leaves dropping off them. Mm. And you get piles of leaves, 2-3 foot high, when we get into November. People complain about health and safety quite rightly.
Street scene will clear them for you.
Yes, if you're fearing street scene, they're very good at that.
Chopping the trees. Not chopping them down, but pruning them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, let's move around. No, you're all right, Brendan. Yeah.
I was just going to say that 25 years ago, at that time, there was a new housing development going to be built next door, and we had a very large ash tree on the front garden, and we had the TPO put on it, and it was very, very simple, easy process. We just said, this has got value.
Yeah.
You guys came out and said, right, it's there. Yeah. And just one more thing on trees. I'm thinking about with Hickson Parish Council, we undertook a tree survey of the whole parish with a tree surgeon. And there is these criteria, isn't there? Falling distance and girth of the tree and stuff like that. And they were able to establish which trees might be at risk of causing damage to other property, and to then give us an idea about which ones might have to take out or which ones could stay the course.
Mm.
So it's the responsibility of the authority, however big or small it might be, to make sure those trees are safe for the properties around.
Yeah, and sometimes it's the unknown, isn't it? Because I've known a tree blow down in a garden, and it was a beautiful tree, a massive tree. It's one of the storms, and you never know, do you? It just happens. It's like on the Isabella Trail when that one went down.
The moment for fatality through a tree is around about £500,000.
Lee, did you come? You came to the table, so I just wondered if you wanted to make any comments on anything we were talking about.
Well, approach me, starts about roundabouts. Anyone
I've got a thing about roundabouts, I'm sorry, it's just a bee in my bonnet. I just think it was something we could do so much with, and yet we don't. Right, Councillor Nixon.
Fruit trees. I'm surrounded by awesome people in my community who are trying to make a positive difference. And we've got a ring of cherry trees on Cherney Park, we've got a cluster of apple trees. Sadly, some of the apple trees got damaged, so people have come forward and we've replaced some of the fruit trees with other fruit trees, but there's one oak tree that's nearby, but it's not a huge distance away from it. And I wondered, I know there's been some S106 money released that hasn't been spent, and I'm just posing the question. The community, some of the community have been deeply involved in creating this, whereas other people don't really realise what's happened, and certainly the fruit is edible. Is it possible to use some of the S106 money, hoping that it hasn't been returned, in hope that this can be labelled as, this tree is edible, this tree isn't edible,
that, because if we did that and somebody gets sick,
would you be able to put cherry trees and apple trees?
What they are?
Well, why can't you do that? The people that's planted them. I mean, all right. To be fair to the borough, I mean, they've been very good with us in certain parts of my area where we've planted a load of trees, actually. And they're really coming up now, and I think next week we'll have fruit on them. And I think the public then will go around picking the fruit up, and and hopefully.
So we can just put a plaque on to say this is what this is.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've marked them up what trees that they are. That's yeah. So yeah, okay. Is that enough on trees, please? Yeah, thank you. We all appreciate trees, and they're lovely, but sometimes they're in the wrong place. But there you go. Yeah.
I just circle next to the play area.
Right, okay, let's move on to the next item.
Just quickly, it was just mentioned there about section 106 monies and so forth. Is that going to be, some of that money to be funneled towards the play areas that are here? And do we know how much and when?
That was my question as well, but thank you for that, yes.
Section 106 tends to be the mainstay of the money that we use for play area development. The difficulty we have with Section 106 is it's in ring fenced often to areas, to a certain area, and invariably it's never where you want it at the right time. So you have to sort of move it about a bit, and also it's also ring fenced to specific issues. For example, and I use it for, I was sat in the room, is we've got something like £1 million for a new swimming pool. Now, I think the last thing I want at the minute is another new swimming pool to maintain and look after in perpetuity. But that's the way where the Section 106 pot works. But certainly, yes, we will be using Section 106 monies for our development to go forward as a mainstay. We are using quite a chunk of Section 106 on the we've got. The developments that come through for that, and the report going through to Cabinet on the, well, the consultation.
Yeah, so just to echo what Josh said, really, the Section 106 money does have certain terms and conditions aligned to it, so it's not a case sometimes of spending it where the greatest need is. Sometimes we have to abide by the T's and C's that are in the Section 106 pot. And as Josh said, our big focus at the moment is Rowley Park, so we've actually started some consultation with schools this week, speaking to school children to get their ideas. What they'd like to see in the park, and we will be going shortly with some consultation very soon to get feedback from the public. That'll be stage one consultation, then we can develop some plans and proposals, and we'll go out to stage two consultation as well, so we can actually present those proposals to the public and they can have another say on what they might like to see in the park. But yeah, that at the moment, all the vast majority, I say the vast majority of the money we'll be using around the park.
Hi, Sonia.
I'm just wondering what the time scale is.
It's difficult to say at the moment because there's quite a lot. Do you mean to build and get
all right, yeah, when will it be?
It's quite difficult to say because there are a number of hurdles we have to jump over. So there's quite a few drainage issues around the park, around the play area there. So we need to make sure we're okay with that. Depending what equipment we're putting, like the planning commission as well, so obviously there's time constraint with that. And other organisations such as Sporting can have their say as well, because there's a couple of pitches there. Yeah. So there's a number of complexities, it's more likely to put the exact time scale on it. Also, the fact that we will have to go out to tender to go through a procurement process for someone to do the work. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot of complexities when you start to look at replacing. I wouldn't like to put a time on it.
Can I just say, Ant, to answer that question, you know, it was like Yelverton Park. You know, we started it. When is it going to get started? Well, this has got to happen, that's got to happen, and that. And can I say, and quite honestly, I've got to say thank you to the people involved in getting Yelverton Park up and running. The public are absolutely very, very happy and very, very pleased with it. So, you know, it's just that things can go wrong, can't they? You know, or the weather or something can really throw it out of sync. But one question, talking about play, I was looking at a booklet the other day and it had got play equipment made by plastic. It's plastic or something. you know, and I'm just wondering, there's one little item, and I was probably looking, thinking about community funding, about one this little piece. If whose permission would we have to get to put it on to Yelverton Park, this little piece of equipment that I thought would be quite good to compensate the area that we've got where the children play?
Well, we'd have to, obviously have to fund it, it'd have to be funded from somewhere, so we have to look at the piece of equipment. But
yeah, yeah.
We want to send it through to Lee.
Anyway, that's something I can look at. And, yeah.
Can you include me in the email as well?
Pardon?
Can you include me in the email as well so that I can...
The email to do with this piece of plastic?
To do with Yelverton Park, to do with the play equipment.
Yeah, well, it's just something personal that I've seen in a booklet, that's what's there. Councillor, you wanted to ask a question?
I did, yes. As I'm literally used to stuff in South West, so that is actually in my little area, so piqued my interest slightly. What is it that you actually look into you put there, like out of interest?
In Round the Park.
And I wanted to sort of bowl a suggestion as well.
Happy to take suggestions. We work off a fairly blank canvas. This is the reason we're going to have a consultation with the public to understand, you know, what they need and what they require. I think if you go from our most recent biggest destination park development, and if you have an educated guest that will come with the same ideas, you can look at Westbridge Park and sort of the things we've got there, wheel sports facility, for example, the zip line, the new play equipment. So if you're going to take an educated guest, you might think the public and the children might come with similar ideas to what we've got at Westbridge Park, which for anyone that's been, is a fantastic park, really well used. So I would make a safe bet that there, sort of things will come up, but you never know, you know, when you speak to members of the public, what might actually come out. Happy to take suggestions.
Is Westbridge Park the one with the sort of gym equipment next to the kids' play area? Sort of like the little. Because I've been round Wolverhampton and around the outskirts of Stafford, and I don't know where it is, my sister told me that a while ago. But there was some little sort of equipment for
like an outdoor gym
for the community.
Side.
Is it?
Side. The bottom of Crook Glen Road.
And it was wonderful. I thought it was great. There was like a little sort of just stuff for the adults to use while they're watching the children. And I just thought it was a great idea. I was just thought it was a great idea. That's because I've obviously been wanting something similar to that in my area, because we don't really have anything like that, so just a suggestion.
Thinking you with community funding. Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
I wondered about the other parks, and I'm sorry to go on about it, but the play areas around, you're talking about, you're looking at all the others.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is that sort of going to be beyond Rowley Park?
What we've done is we've
you have people ask about them, because
there's lots of little play areas, like you say, Anne. There's lots of little play areas that need a little bit of
care and attention.
Through your chair. We've scored all play areas now, so we've gone with a matrix of play area matrix and scored all
17
play areas we've got that are under, that we either own or under our maintenance. We've looked at those, we've schooled them, so we've got a ranking based on the type of equipment, the suitability for the area with the young people, the age of the equipment, etc. We're now costing that up to say, right, what are the costs? But we roughly know that a play area costs, certainly in Cannock Chase, on average around about £180,000 to £200,000 to replace. So we've got those costs. We've got a top 11 that we think we need to hit first, and those are the ones we're going to be starting to work down on an annual programme. And that again reportedly going back to cabinet, say these are your costs, are you okay? And we want to use this piece of section one of 6 months.
Again, I'd just wondering back to Tom's Valley
At Cannock we can do, we probably get about four small play areas a year done, with one officer. He's a very good officer. The borough, we've got one officer that does it, that will do it full time. So, and if you're doing something like Rowley Park, that's probably going to take a fair chunk of that officer's time.
Yeah.
So you'd probably get Rowley Park started this year and maybe another couple, like we did last year. If we want to do more, we'd have to invest in some more officers.
Mm.
So.
Brendan, you want to come
There's
in?
There's a very, very good Section 106 application template that members can use for applications under £50,000, which will enable that to be fast-tracked through rather than go through Cabinet. And so what I've urged with officers in planning is that we, as councillors, irrespective of what scrutiny we're on, we should be receiving a report at least twice a year on what Section 106 money is available in our wards, what planning application it refers to, and what the limitations are on the use of that Section 106 money. So then councillors, ward members, can go out into their community and say, look folks, we've got 14,000 quid here, how do you want to use it? We've got a play area there that needs refurbishment, what's your idea? So we can get more involved rather than leaving all to the officers.
Thoughts, Josh?
Round over.
You can, but £50,000 is in the volume of play area.
Been agreed that this fast track process for bids under 50,000 is part of our policy.
Well, it doesn't have to go to county, does it?
It doesn't have to go to cabinet.
So, in order to use any Section 106 money, I have to go put a report to cabinet, and cabinet have to recommend its use and its inclusion in the capital program for my Section 106, for our Section 106 money that we use. And that's standard in my school.
If it's over
£50,000, yes. But you know, when you look at the average cost is 180 to 200,000 pounds for a small play area, you know, you're going to probably get a couple of pieces of equipment, which we wouldn't do a couple of pieces of equipment.
But through your chair, I'd rather we had four £40,000 improvements or four parks that are improved using that fast track process than trying to wait for some major project to come down the line.
Yeah, I'll take your point. Yeah. Philip, do you want to come in?
We've got an area in Stone, the plot, you know, it's part of the common plot, and there's quite a large area there that is leased by the borough, and there was a problem with the lease at one stage. But it's just an area, you know. Is there anything that could be done to put some sort of play equipment on there?
Oh, for the play area bit,
Through you, I'll be completely blunt with you all. The borough can't afford its 70,000. It's 70 play areas it's got at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. Like most authorities, we're having to look at do we need all these play areas? Are they? And this is one of the reasons we've looked at. We've scored them at the minute, and we're looking at the borough needs analysis and things like that. Play areas historically go into places when they're built new, and you have young families in them. Young families then grow up, and then people stay in, and there's a play area you don't really need. So we need to look at in the whole really and say, right, okay, do we really need a play area there, or do we need one somewhere else? So we're over the next couple of years, we are going to have a serious look at play areas. But I'd be really reluctant, unless there's a real need in the community, to put any additional equipment in, because of the long-term liability of that, the maintenance liability. Okay.
Councillor Fordham, did you want to come back?
Wanted to add to Joss's point, if I may, Chair, and that's if you think of Westbridge Park, which has already been mentioned, it is a remarkably good facility. And it is
brilliant,
And when we've looked at these 70-odd play areas, there are quite a number dotted around Westbridge that you have to question whether people, the community within those areas, are actually even using those tiny play areas, because Westbridge is such an attraction. So if you're looking at how best to use your resources, building an area or investing in a park like Westbridge could well make sense within a certain facility. The other point, picking up on what Councillor McEwen said, is that, you know, if you've got small areas where you don't have a Westbridge close to you, that the kind of money you're talking about could actually do quite a good job in terms of improving the facility that's already there. So it's a question of using resources as best we can. It won't always be popular decisions to be made, but that's the intention.
I really take your point about that. I mean, the problem is that, you know, we've got these little player areas, and sometimes you've got 1, 2, 3 year olds, you know, and the mums can't take them to these, you know, because it's quite a way away. That's the problem we've got, you know, that is the problem we've got. So we need to, I'm going to come round, councillor. I'll go down this side now.
Thank you. The money that you're talking about, the 106 money that is being allocated to these areas, are they play parks within a certain area to the 106 money?
Chair, through you, each 106 has its own ring fence attached to it. And that can be problematic because of the size of the ring fence, and that is a problem with the developer initially.
So through you, Chair, so for example, if we were to go back in time to Homecroft, the Homecroft Park was paid for by the sale of the little play park and the sale of land that built all the housing. But then when all the new buildings, all the new build went on Beaconside, there was no allocated funding for play parks because they were building their own play parks.
Yes, that
okay.
That
which is why the Parkside estate didn't get play park facility money on their estate.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. Finally, the answer that's been going around on social media answered.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Developers can do that. They can choose to put their own.
Well, I'm sure, previous county councillor will be very pleased to find that. This question's been answered because he was absolutely persecuted on social media because the residents didn't believe him.
Yeah.
They didn't believe him.
Councillor Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. Choosing my words incredibly carefully, there is a group of people, a considerable group of people that are trying to create positive change. They've been litter picking, they're planting, they're neighbourhood watching, and they're really pulling together. As a result of them pulling together, there has been arrests made, and as we navigate this period of change, some people are understandably are feeling the need for lighting at Charney Park. I understand this has a financial implication, and is there, given the seriousness of the fact of, I don't want to say it without saying it, so is there a way you can get money to get lights on the park? Yes.
Because I think, I mean, while the officers are looking at one another, I'm thinking to myself, though, what you've got to remember, you put lights on there, sometimes it attracts antisocial behaviour at night because people... It's a catch 22 situation in some ways. You know, it's very, very difficult, Louise. I understand.
This is a whole other council meeting.
But I don't know whether Josh has got any answers to you or Lee's got any answers to that.
I don't
really want to say what it is on a recorded meeting because, of course, these things just don't happen to me.
I think the recording is only for the minutes, really.
We're working as a group to combat the reason that people want this, but there is a problem at the minute.
Yeah, and I think that is the downside with lots of parks and open spaces that are open to the public.
Yeah.
Again, I it worries me putting too much light in because it does encourage antisocial behaviour. Comments about Westford Park recently. There was some money available through the Police and Crime Commissioner last year. Had some pots of money on antisocial behaviour. I'm probably talking more about this antisocial behaviour, where you've got a park where there was considered a significant risk, or there had been significant police issues.
Mm.
I think that's where we're at.
And we had a park that was put forward by the police, I believe, and the hub was it, Anna? Kind of park, and they gave some money for CCTV and some visual lighting, but the path they were lighting was a through path from Callick out onto another road, so there was a reason for people being there, and there'd been a lot of antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, there is a reason.
Yeah.
Councillor Nixon, if there's a lot of problem about antisocial behaviour, get to Inspector Giles Boss to put a dispersal order on the area at night, you know, at a certain time. It's a dispersal order as well, Marnie.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being...
Sorry, you want to come in? Yeah. Carry on.
Ever so quickly, again, I heard you mention subject parks, affordability thereof, and obviously we're getting this new unitary authority that's marching towards it, and there's been discussion about the broader, for a better word, offloading parts of their joint owned or owned lands to parishes, yeah. Mm. So are, can some of these parks that are now termed to be unaffordable potentially be given over to parishes that maybe are nominal fee?
We certainly look at it. We've done something similar with Echo Shore recently. Well, in the last, since I've been in power the last couple of years, one of the first things I've been doing was unblocking a little bit of a sticky point with Echo Shore Parish Council. They wanted to take over a park. And in fairness, it wasn't a park of great interest to us as the Borough Council, but we've ended up surrendering over a lease on a long term lease to them. They're doing work on it, so they're happy, we're happy. That sort of thing, to me, I'd much rather do that than close a park now.
Yeah.
So just sorry, Chair, just one bit. Is something that then the parishes can come directly to the Borough and request that?
We'd certainly be happy to talk to parish councils if there's any parks in the area. We wouldn't promise anything, but we need to start that dialogue at some point over the next couple of years.
Yeah, thank you. Lee, you want to come in?
Yeah, just to add on that point again, just says also to add, there just needs to be a robust agreement in place with the parish council around the maintenance and inspection regimes of the play parks and play areas, because we need to make sure that we have shortages that they will be maintained safely.
Yeah,
that isn't necessarily a barrier, but it can sometimes be a slight hurdle. We have to have these agreements in place. For example, that the parish council comes to us and asks to take on public toilets, when you actually start to explain all of the liabilities with that, it actually comes a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, thank you. And sometimes you find that some of these play parks belong to some of the developers that had developed the land. I mean, I'm dealing with the case now, you know, and they're putting these football nets on, you know, and I'm thinking that shouldn't be on there, you know. Anyway, that's another problem.
Sorry, Chair, I suppose if the lands were given over to the parishes completely, not on this basis, then there wouldn't be those issues of the liabilities coming back to Borough, because it would be directly imposed itself.
Yeah. Right, okay, so I think we've done enough on play parks. Everybody had their say, and yeah, okay, let's move on, as we're going to be here till midnight. Page 18, any queries? No? Page 19? No? Page 20? 21? I think we've done waste and recycling when we're talking about this.
Can I just ask one question, though? You said you've done it. Talking about the change in the type of plastics that we're now collecting. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
What is it that we're now collecting that we weren't collecting?
So what we start, the government has said from 2027 they want all local authorities in England to start collecting what we call sea grade films. So that is things, your bread wrappers, and your films off the top of your hard card and things like that. So carrier bags, that's just typical example of sea grade. Government have said they want to collect it until 2027, and we've all got to do it. That's what we're looking at doing. Now, we're in a position, we're really lucky, we've got Veolia, the Material Recycling Facility, they can accommodate that as it stands, and they're looking at doing a trial with us at the moment for the next 12 months with the sales and Newcastle to start looking at how much they're getting to. Because at the minute, we don't contaminate it, have been for it. We accept it, but it goes as non-target or as rejected. When it gets there, they're looking at what they can do and what they can do in the long term, because there isn't at the moment a UK market for it. But then the government, by saying they want us to do it, this sort of thing, and then you need to need to produce a market for it. But they're getting there with the slowly.
Yeah. Okay. I suppose. Sorry.
You, Chair. I have to say, I think there's a sense of irony that we're dealing with things like that, and yet we're importing food that we could be growing ourselves. It's just ridiculous.
Yes, Philip. Yeah. Okay.
I ask if this is the type of stuff that we take to the supermarkets. You know,
yes.
With the
soft plastics.
Yeah.
Plastic bags and
wrappers.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're going to have another task and finish, does it? On plastics when we've done the food waste.
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much. Right, okay.
It's not that exciting.
Right, we're on page 22 now. Is that a bit?
Can I just ask just one thing? It said that the number of bins, missed bin collections,
mm-hmm.
And it had sort of gone up to 3:45. And I'm just wondering what the reasons were.
Christmas, probably.
Oh, Christmas, okay.
Yeah, because people put lots of bins out, and so we're doing this. So it's a seasonal type of thing.
Okay.
And joke apart, both local authorities, the Borough and Canic Chase, both do extremely well with their missed bin collections. We don't have a problem.
Okay.
But certainly compared to what I hear from colleagues elsewhere in the Midlands and others, they have, you know, they really are sort of.
Right, we're on page 22 now, and food inspections, premises inspection, premise inspections. You know, is there any worries that we've got in the borough, or is everything on board? I mean, this is Gabrielle's question again, really, but she's not here.
Yeah, I'll try and.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the fact is, I think we're back on track, which is something that we should celebrate, because, as you know, it was a difficult situation just 12 months ago. I think there were issues with staffing and restructuring required, but I think it's coming back now, Chair.
So we're doing okay?
Yep.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah? Okay. I know this has nothing to do with food, actually, but I mean, I've got to ask the question, and you might be able to answer this, Hannah, I don't know, vape shops and things like that. We had a big discussion about that not long back, but it seems to have drifted down the path, sort of thing. And so where are we at with that?
I have to say, like you, I think we haven't had as much contact or complaints at the moment, as far as I'm aware. We work closely with police and with the county council as well on them, but I haven't had any reports of any issues, I'd say, in the last 3 months, like that. But I can always ask the team and see if there's anything which we need to be aware of.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Scott.
I didn't have a.
I'm sorry?
Can I be excused? I have an appointment to pick up my daughter. I didn't realise it was going to.
I know. We're usually a couple of. Yes, of course you can. Yeah, that's fine.
No.
Is there anything that you feel that you need to?
I've brought up what Councillor Jack Rose asked me to bring up.
Right, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Right, page 23. Page 24. Everybody okay? Page 25? Page 26? 25, sorry, Councillor Nixon.
I've got quite a big problem regarding a large amount of people having problems with residents within Stafford and Rural Homes and Housing Plus properties, and we need a strategy moving forward. They have asked if they can come to the committee directly. And I have spoken to Jackie to get there so that you can hear it from their voices instead of me. And I don't want to say anything. I think it needs to come from them and not from me.
Councillor Nixon, is that something from the public? We've got a public question time.
So that's going to go.
So is that something that they could bring as a public question time?
But ahead of that happening, I think a strategy needs to be put in place to sort out the problem, in that there is significant antisocial behaviour going on, to the extent that I'm thinking one person in particular spent about an hour and a half really upset about it, saying that it had caused fibromyalgia, and she was feeling that she had contacted the police and there were incident numbers and nothing was happening, and she's not the only person who had said that.
Can I suggest to you then that you take it up with Victoria, you know, after this meeting?
She is aware of it.
She is aware of it. Well, why don't you bring her and have a meeting with her and discuss it? Yeah, yeah. I think that's the quick and best answer to get in touch with Victoria, and I'm sure she'll. Sorry.
She's very good.
She is. Yeah.
Can I ask a question, please, Chair? The delivery of the affordable housing per year with registered providers, on the basis that we know that there are some registered providers that have been selling off some of their older stock, are they making up the amounts that they are that they currently have through new delivery of housing? Am I saying, have I explained myself in a...
I think I might be able to answer this for you, Anna. I don't know whether it's, but that's where we've got Wayne from Reeking, because Housing Plus and Reeking have joined forces,
yes.
And he's coming to our September meeting, you know, for the same reason about them selling and buying, selling the houses. And Anna, if you want to carry on with that.
The stock numbers were still the same, okay. Despite that.
So all housing providers from time to time do sell vacant properties on rare occasions,
yeah.
If the cost of bringing them back into use is significant and they don't have a long-term future. So this is something that's happened, it happens regularly, but the very, very small numbers we're talking about. What we are talking to Housing Plus about is their strategy going forwards, how they class those homes as the ones that they want to sell, and also how they are looking to increase the development programme to be able to make sure that we have a net increase of stock as opposed to a net loss of stock. So absolutely, it's the right question to ask, and I have been in touch with Chief Executive, who will cover that point at the meeting in September. But if you do need further reassurance, do let me know,
yeah.
And I can get an email exchange with yourselves or get the questions clarified if there are concerns prior to that meeting.
Thank you very
much. Okay, page 25, page 26. Right, okay, thank you very much. So now we're on to agenda item 7B, business planning report. Has anybody got any queries on that? No? Right, so we'll move on to the next item, which is the annual scrutiny business report. Any queries on that? Everybody's looking happy? Good. Right, so now we move on to 7C. The work programme, which if you look at the back sheet, there's an awful lot on there, but can I just say to you, a lot of that's on there will be coming back with reports, with Anna's guidance telling me this, throughout the year, you know, like the food safety annual report, well that will be coming to the committee in any case. Plastics and that, we've been talking about that, haven't we? Turning point, we're having a presentation in December from them. Housing Plus are coming in September. We've got JARS in March next year on the community and wellbeing. Disabled facility grants, but that comes in September. Trees managed and tree protection order, I think we've done a lot on that, and Josh is... keep us up to date, street scene update, we get that in any case. And the Viola, they come, and also the Freedom Leisure, they come to the meetings. So really there's only probably about a couple of items on there that which is the task and finish food waste, you know, which we've got to take on board. And then all right, the children care and housing, which is a big thing from the county to this, because the borough is housing and we've got children in care, which is the county. So my my suggestion to you all is there anything at all? I'd like to think we can use our committee to work together with the county to anything that they feel that, you know, we can move and help people for the good of the community. And that's what we're about. So, I mean, one of the things, again, as I said, children in care and housing. So I think that's something that we should pick up on and scrutinise, and the food and is there anything else that you feel? Right, Anne, I'll bring you in now and see your hand going up and down.
I did send out an email earlier, but it's probably a bit late, but you probably haven't seen it. And I did send it to your department, I think, a different time, but you probably did just I'm sorry about that. And what it's about is now it's about healthier food advertising.
Right.
If Transport for London did a scheme where they stop people advertising unhealthy food, and it's been taken up by about 20 councils since then. I've sent you the article.
St. Albans is the 22nd.
Oh, 22nd. And the thing about it is it's been evaluated by a couple of the big London hospitals, and they've found that it's reduced obesity by 20%. And also,
that's one of the things that health at county obesity,
And diabetes type 2, it's reduced that significantly. And so I was wondering, I've sort of asked all around, and I don't think we are actually responsible for advertising the borough. Mm-hmm. I think it is county that are responsible for advertising, and it's things like McDonald's and Cadbury's chocolate and all of that, and instead they put up a really positive advertising poster. And I'm just wondering whether we could work on that, because it would have such beneficial effects and save a lot of money in the long term.
I think you're probably right, Anne, and at the end of the day, you probably know as well as I do, there's many people walking round as we speak that don't even know they've got diabetes, you know, and it's quite worrying, actually, because it's not picked up early enough. It can cause major, major problems with people's health.
And premature death.
So that's probably something we can take back to county and probably discuss at Health and Care, you know, about advertising help, you know, because as I say, obesity is on the list to be scrutinised at county, I believe.
You know, it seems like quite a significant thing that we can do.
So we can take that on board and, You want to come in?
Yes, just about this, sorry.
That's okay.
I was actually researching that there is a, with the obesity. I am obviously interested in battling obesity. For Staffordshire as a whole, there is, outside of Stafford, there is this tier 3 management, weight management programme that's actually quite successful and has been outside of Staffordshire. We don't have access to that within Staffordshire, so they can get access to things such as Wegovy, Mounjaro, special psychologist teams, weight management teams to help with their planning meals, and, you know, to get actual real help, not just to battle the weight itself and to help them lose it quickly, but to also battle the sort of eternal battle, internal battle that people have with weight. Some people, it may be the fact that it's irregular eating, some people may eat too much. But either way, it's for everybody it will be different. But I do believe that for Staffordshire, and I am going to obviously bring this up with the ICB, that we should, or a suggestion would be to bring that tier 3 system into Staffordshire, because I do believe that it would help a lot.
I think statistically we've got rising levels of obesity in just the borough.
And I think what your suggestion is, and that would actually come hand in hand.
Yeah, and not be a really expensive thing to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Nixon, yeah.
Cheap foods tend to have a high fat content.
McDonald's,
we can all talk about McDonald's.
Yeah.
I did look through it, and there is actually a link as part of that information
for local authorities that are interested in introducing a healthier food advertising policy, there's like a toolkit that they provide through here. But according to the information that you sent through, it did say that the reduction in advertising and the promotion of healthier options led to a 20% reduction in sugary products and a 1,000 calorie.
It's so interesting.
1,000 calorie decrease per week per household from
right.
a healthy food and drink.
Yeah.
So maybe it is something that you know should perhaps
quickly, yeah, counsel.
On healthy eating and this, the fresher foods are more perishable. And that seems to have accelerated in that the shelf life of fresh food at the moment is really, really short.
Yeah.
So when I have been a part of creating fresh food groups in that we each buy things and then distribute it into smaller portions between us, because you can't ever get the right amount.
Okay. Right.
Just back through you, Chair. We, as part of our food waste group, have already discussed this kind of thing, healthier eating, exactly what you mentioned, as part of our advertising or part of our information campaign to families to reduce food waste. So we have actually discussed.
Councillor Thordam, you wanted to come in.
Very, very briefly, you'll be pleased to know, Chair. I just wonder whether the committee members feel that there's a role for planning policy in relation to fast food outlets. I know some authorities do limit the number of fast food outlets in town centres or close to schools. We don't. It's always seemed to me something of a gap.
Well, you remember, Councillor Fordham, that we had the KFC, didn't we, come to planning committee a couple of years ago, or about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It got thrown out. But we went to a planning inspector, am I right? And he got passed. And that's the problem we've got. We know our area, we know what's right, but you get these planning, don't get me on this, planning inspectors then come along and grant things.
Yeah, absolutely, but we have no policy to protect ourselves from this, whereas other authorities do, and are more successful. So I just wonder whether that's something we should be considering. Yeah,
that's a good idea. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Any other ideas about our planning about our agenda for the forthcoming year? Right, Councillor Thornley.
We've been in this situation before, I recall. The looks quite a workload on there for our allotted.
It's not when you break it down, though. That's where I was trying
to
explain.
We've had to do it before and have an extra meeting.
Sorry?
We've had to have an extra meeting in the year before.
Yeah.
So if need be, we're
going to
do that again.
No, we're not doing that again. Hopefully not, apart from the task and finish. And that's what I say. A lot of that on there is what people will be coming to the meetings in any case throughout the year. So, you know, it's, but please tell me if there's anything on that you feel that we should be doing. I mean, Councillor Fordham's came up with this idea. Great. Anybody else got any ideas that we feel that it should be? Are you quite happy then that we carry on with the Foulston Waste and that and the housing for children in care? Yeah? Right. Councillor, did you put your hand up, Josh? Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I did. When would you like your tree presentation? Would you like it next meeting or the meeting after?
It's what, sorry?
Would you like it to the next meeting or the meeting after?
We've got Housing Plus coming to that. Well, we could do it at the next meeting. What does the committee want to do? Next meeting? Yeah?
Do you know it now, Lee?
Chair, I'm just sorry.
Do you want to do it tomorrow?
I'm just being told we've got DFGs as well at that one.
It's what, sorry?
We've got DFGs, Disabled Facilities Grants as well at that one.
Oh, right, okay. So we'd take it the one after then, which is the one after. December. Oh, crikey. We can talk about Christmas trees, can't we? It's in December.
So we go for December. Then.
Yes, please.
Lovely.
Well, can I say, is everybody had all they're saying everything? And right, thank you so much for attending and safe journey home, everyone. And the meeting's closed. Thank you.